Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of January 1st. We'll start with local news. Area unemployment rate down more than 1% over last year. From Springfield. The unemployment rate in the Champaign-Urbana Metropolitan Service Area, which comprises Champaign, Ford, and Piatt counties, dropped more than a percentage point from 1 year ago, according to preliminary data released by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and Illinois Department of Employment Security. The MSA was 3.1% in November, down from 4.3% a year earlier. In the Champaign-Urbana MSA, non-farm employment increased by 3,800 compared with November 2018. Employment gains over the year were posted in government, plus 1,600, leisure and hospitality, plus 1,300, professional and business services, plus 300, education and health services, plus 200, information, plus 200, mining and construction, plus 200, financial activities, plus 100, transportation, warehousing, and utilities, plus 100, and retail trade, plus 100. Declines were reported in wholesale trade, minus 200, and manufacturing, minus 100. The unemployment rate decreased in November in Ford and Iroquois counties when compared with year-ago levels. The jobless rate in Ford County was 3.8% in November, down from 4.8% a year earlier, while Iroquois County's rate was 3.6%, down from 4.4%. The jobless rate fell in 13 Illinois metropolitan areas and increased in one. Illinois businesses added jobs in 9 metro areas, with the largest percentage increases in Champaign-Urbana, plus 3.4%, plus 3,800, Carbondale-Marion, plus 2.5%, plus 1,500, Decatur, plus 1.5%, plus 800, and Chicago-Naperville-Arlington Heights, plus 24,200, or plus 0.6%. The number of non-farm jobs increased in 9 Illinois metropolitan areas, decreased in 4, and was unchanged in 1. Total non-farm jobs were down in Peoria, minus 1.7%, minus 3,100. Davenport, Moline, Rock Island, Iowa, Illinois, minus 1.2%, minus 2,300. And Danville, minus 0.4%, minus 100. The industry sectors recording job growth in the majority of metro areas included government, 11 of 14, mining and construction, 9 of 14, transportation, warehousing, and utilities, 9 of 14, education and health services, 9 of 14, and leisure and hospitality, 8 of 14. The non-seasonally adjusted Illinois unemployment rate was 3.4% in November 2019 and stood at 12.2% at its peak in this economic cycle in January 2010. Nationally, the non-seasonally adjusted unemployment rate was 3.3% in November 2019 and 10.6% in January 2010 at its peak. The unemployment rate identifies those individuals who are out of work and seeking employment. Miracle on Main, 100 years and still printin' for News Gazette. From Champaign. For much of its life, the Champaign News Gazette, the newspaper formed 100 years ago with the merger of Champaign Daily News and Champaign Daily Gazette, has faced financial stress. It was born, in fact, from financial difficulties partly the result of World War I that ended a year earlier. But none of the money problems were mentioned in the cheery story that appeared at the bottom of page 1 on Sunday, December 14th, 1919, when the first Champaign News Gazette was published. We come to you this morning not as a new paper, but as the joining of the two forces which have served you in the past, said the anonymous greeting, likely written by the publisher of the new paper, D.W. Stevick, who for 4 years had run the Daily News. There was no need for Stevick to go into detail about the merger. The other local newspapers, the Urbana Daily Courier and the student-run Daily Illini, had scooped the News Gazette days earlier on its own story. The Courier reported December 8th that Stevick had purchased the Gazette for in the neighborhood of $70,000. 2 days later, the Illini pegged the same sum at $60,000, but the narrative was much the same, an indication that Stevic had been the source. Owing to the fact that the cost of operating a newspaper has increased from 3 to 4 times the cost in 1915, and because of the increased cost of paper and higher wages, the Gazette has followed the action of scores of newspapers throughout the country, merging with its competitor, the Daily Illini Reported. The necessity of raising subscription prices was an added difficulty. Champaign, moreover, is too small a city to support 2 papers the size of the News. Keen competition made the operation of both newspapers a losing proposition in many respects. The Courier's publisher, Abe Burrows, offered a similar take in an editorial. In the case of the Courier, the advertising rate today is not 20% higher than it was before the war. In the case of the Gazette, it is not 10% higher than in 1914. The subscription rate of the Courier in that period has only increased from 10 cents a week to 12 cents, while the Gazette has changed from 12 cents to 15 cents. Expenses, however, have doubled, and in the case of print paper have quadrupled. 5 years ago, printers and pressmen were glad to get a $20 a week. Today they draw from $30 to $35 a week, and at that they are still underpaid in proportion to the increased cost of living, Burroughs wrote. Newsprint costs more than quintupled over 5 years, he said, and the Gazette was looking at revenue of about $80,000 in 1920 and expenses of $105,000. The Gazette threw up the sponge, and who wouldn't under those conditions, Burroughs concluded. For more than a decade, the merged newspaper survived but hardly thrived. Then another crisis. The sudden sale of the News-Gazette in July 1933 to a small group of News-Gazette employees. Stevic was to get $200,000 in notes from the sale, plus $15,000 a year for the rest of his life. But he sued, claiming the newspaper had been sold while he was mentally distracted, and that it was worth $600,000, not $200,000. The trial in Champaign County Circuit Court got spectacular. Front-page treatment in the Courier, as well as regular coverage in the Daily Illini, but there was no mention of it in the News-Gazette, whose publisher now was Robert P. McKinley, a public accountant. Lily Procyse was listed as secretary-treasurer. It was she who negotiated the sale of the newspaper and informed Stevic. "You should sign those papers. If you don't, you can't get a cent. The paper has been sold," Stevic's chauffeur testified. Stevic's attorney, O.B. Dobbins, said that the new owners knew his mental and physical condition, took advantage of his condition, and robbed him. Elmer Blow, business manager of the News-Gazette, testified that Stevic had allowed the newspaper's equipment to deteriorate, and local contractor A.W. Stuhlman said the News-Gazette building at 48 Main Street is in poor condition, and that any severe shock would be likely to cause the building to collapse, said the Courier. Later, the top 2 floors of the building were removed. Almost a year to the day that the News-Gazette was sold, Stevic regained control with an out-of-court settlement. It was immediately reported in the Courier, although News-Gazette readers weren't informed until a week later, with a terse announcement that Mr. McKinley has, for consideration agreed between the parties, sold all his interest to Mr. Stevic in the capital stock of the corporation. A series of stock notes originally made out to Stevic in 1927 and transferred to McKinley in 1933 simply read, "Canceled, July 14, 1934. Stevic died the following year at the age of 48, and for the next 2/3 of a century, his wife, Helen, and daughter, Marjan, owned and operated the paper with the help of a host of honest, hard-working, and dedicated employees, mostly. The next round of financial troubles came 3 decades later, when the renamed Champaign-Urbana Courier, which had perennially trailed the News-Gazette in advertising and circulation, suddenly became supreme. In 1962, the Courier's circulation was 32,324 to 31,739 for the News-Gazette. Aid to the News-Gazette came from an unlikely source, the Johnson administration's Justice Department, which in March 1967 charged Lindsay Schaub Incorporated of Decatur with conspiracy in an attempt to monopolize the Champaign-Urbana newspaper market. The government alleged that in an effort to remove the News-Gazette from the market, the newspaper chain intentionally operated the Champaign-Urbana Courier at losses of as much as $500,000 a year and subsidized the Courier with profits from its other Illinois newspapers. The government said that over 8 years, Lindsay Schaub had subsidized $3 million in losses at the Courier in order to damage the News-Gazette. 2 months later, a consent decree barred the chain from offering special low rates to advertisers who agreed to not advertise in a competing paper. It also prevented Lindsay Schaub from purchasing the News-Gazette. 12 years later, Lindsay Schaub and the Courier went out of business, and the News-Gazette's most profitable days followed. A strong local economy, a contract to print a downstate edition of the Chicago Tribune, and a virtual newspaper monopoly in East Central Illinois propelled the newspaper through the 80s and 90s. It expanded into the Danville market, became a 24-hour operation with 3 editions daily, and moved from the 48 Main Street building, once a harness factory and the newspaper's home for 70 years, down the street to a spacious, remodeled 3-story building. The 2000s, however, pummeled the News-Gazette with a succession of setbacks. The rapid embrace of the Internet and its instant access to news and information, the loss of the Tribune printing contract, a major recession, difficulties for the entire newspaper industry, and a sad and costly betrayal of D.W. Stevick's only child, Marijan, by her trusted attorney and newspaper CEO. In that episode, John Hirschfeld, Marijan Stevick's Chicago attorney for 38 years, eventually lost his law license after he was accused by a state licensing board of misconduct for overbilling the newspaper's umbrella corporation by more than $1 million over 5 years, committing a fraudulent real estate transaction, fraudulently using a signature stamp, and improperly revealing the confidences of a client. The new owners of the nearly 100-year-old merged Champaign Daily News and Champaign Daily Gazette, the Champaign Multimedia Group, took over in November. There was a time 30 years ago or so when someone in the newsroom printed up T-shirts with the slogan, News Gazette, the miracle on Main Street. It was a reference to all journalists, printers, bundle haulers, and everyone else who had suddenly upped their game and proudly put out an award-winning newspaper with 3 editions a day and a circulation of more than 50,000. But that informal slogan could just as easily have referred to a small city newspaper that somehow survived mismanagement, looting, depressions and recessions, aggressive competition, technological shifts, changes in the public's appetite for news, and other financial stresses. That's the real miracle, going on for 100 years. This article was written by Tom Kasich. His column appears Sunday in the News-Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. And now from Rand Tool. No couch potato. Student of Month winner's goals are sky high. L. Couch of Rand Tool, the Rand Tool Exchange Club Student of the Month for December, has set her sights high. Couch's goals are to earn a bachelor's degree in astronomy from the University of Illinois, then study for 5 more years at the U of I to complete her master's and doctorate in astronomy, with a primary focus on planetary astronomy or astrophysics. I plan on taking my degree to Alabama, Texas, or California to work for NASA and help the world learn more good things about astronomy, Couch said. It is my passion, and I expect nothing but great things to come out of this degree. Couch, daughter of Stacy Couch, ranked second in her class of 169 at Rand Tool Township High School with a grade point average of 5.623. Her school activities have included Interact Club, Student Council Band, Marching Band, Scholastic Bowl, Book Club, Future Business Leaders of America, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Big Brothers Big Sisters, National Honor Society, and Girls Astronomy Camp. Offices held include Scholastic Bowl Acting Co-Captain for both Varsity and Junior Varsity, and Student Council Secretary. Couch has received several honors and awards, including American Legion Award, Illinois Leadership Seminar, Excellence in Academics, Excellence in Honors Algebra, Excellence in Honors Biology, Excellence in Honors Chemistry, Excellence in Honors Geometry, and Excellence in Spanish Language. Her civic and volunteer activities, Food Pantry, donation to the food drive at RTHS, Student Council, and Interact, stuffing backpacks for underprivileged children in the area at Bethany Park Church, Big Brothers Big Sisters Mentor, yard work for the American Lutheran Church and members of the congregation, and yard work for St. Malachi Church and parish members. Her work experience has included baseball, softball scorekeeper, concession stand server, county market cashier, and parcel and Bank of Rantoul teller. People, businesses, events bring change to Rantoul area. Year in Review, Part 1. To quote Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, "My, people come and go so quickly here." If there was a theme for the top news stories in Rantoul press coverage area for the first 6 months of 2019, it would be comings and goings. People came and went. So did businesses. Here's our look at some of the top stories of the year just passed for January through June. 3 take new positions in Thomasboro. In February, 3 people were named to new positions with the Village of Thomasboro. Jasmine Boyce of Rantoul was named the new village clerk to replace Jeremy Reel, who resigned in September 2018, but agreed to stay until a replacement was found. Reel serves as village administrator, treasurer for the Village of Fisher. Mayor Tyler Evans said he hoped to expand Boyce's duties beyond those of the clerk. After she was sworn in, she had a 3-month probationary period. Also, John Curry was appointed to fill the seat on the village board that had been empty since Trustee Anna Martin resigned in December 2018. Curry, who is retired, said he has been a Thomasboro resident for about 40 years. The third appointment was Gary Rosenbeck, who is retired from Illinois Department of Transportation Highway Maintenance to serve as part-time public works employee. He was charged primarily with street maintenance. New businesses in Fisher. Also in February, Fisher's business climate was looking up, with the announcement 2 new businesses would be opening in the coming weeks. A dental office was slated to open in town March 11th, and a bakery and ice cream shop later in the year. Dr. David Noe and a partner said he would open Fisher Dental in the former pharmacy facility. Mayor Mike Baylor and Reel met with Noe and partner, who also operates clinics in Champaign, Mahomet, and Onarga. The office will be open Mondays and until noon on Saturday to start, with more hours coming as needed. Baylor and Reel also announced another new business for the town. Cited for the other half of Ingold's Meat and Deli, Crow Ridge Ice Cream and Bakery. That opening was set for mid to late April, however, it has not yet opened. A laundromat opened in December and will include gaming machines, which have not yet been installed. 8th grade's graduation ceremony returns. The Rantoul City Schools Board approved at its February monthly meeting the restoration of the 8th grade graduation ceremony. In 2013, the board did away with the graduation service, citing safety concerns. Board President Joan Fitzgerald said the board overstepped its boundaries by voting to cancel the event. "Our responsibility is not to get in the school and tell each individual school what to do," Fitzgerald said. "The community wants that graduation back, and I respect the community. So I'm saying bring it back and decide what to do. Let us know what you are doing because we are still going to monitor safety. I'm sure they are not going to do anything that isn't safe." There was some controversy later, however, when some parents objected to the graduation ceremony being held in the morning. Previously, the services were held of an evening. Those objecting to a morning ceremony said it made it difficult for many people to attend. Resident Wendell Golston presented a petition bearing the names of more than 300 signatures asking for the change to an evening time. Superintendent Michelle Ramage said student attendance is often low at evening events. The school board kept the time at 9 a.m. School districts make changes at the top. Several changes were in the works at area school districts in 2019. It was announced in February that PVO South Principal Jeffrey Eisenhower would later take over as superintendent of the Prairie View Ogden School District, which includes the junior high in Flatville. Beginning July 1, 2020, he will succeed Vic White, who is retiring, as the district's top official. Eisenhower came to PVO 13 years ago, after jobs at Urbana High School and Centennial High School. His salary will be $100,000. In April, Paxton Buckley Load Administrator and Head Football Coach Jeff Graham was named to succeed longtime administrator Drew Lobmaster at Ludlow Grade School. Graham began his duties July 1st in the dual capacity of superintendent principal. At PBL, he served as high school director of student services and was a 12-year veteran as the school's head football coach. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Hugo Perkins, 62, of Rantoul, died December 19th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. Funeral services were held December 28th at Northside Church of Christ, Champaign. Burial followed in Spring Hill Cemetery, Danville. Barbara Joyce, 84, of Paxton, died December 24th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Burial will be in Ochilada City Cemetery in Oklahoma. Bear Family Funeral Services Paxton is in charge of arrangements. Darlene Zink, 69, of Rantoul, died Wednesday, December 25th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral service was held December 28th at Mackie Wright Funeral Home. Memorial contributions may be made to LarryZinkFuneralHome.com. Barbara Kaufman, 78, of Danvers, mother of a Paxton resident, died December 25th at her residence. A funeral service was held December 31st at the West Twin Grove Church in Bloomington. Burial followed in Rosewood Cemetery, Bloomington. Otto Argo Calvert Memorial Home, Danvers, is in charge of arrangements. The family suggests memorials be made to Alzheimer's Research or the American Cancer Society. Condolences and memories can be shared at calvertmemorial.com. Raymond C. Ahrens, 84, of Sibley, brother of a Thomasboro resident, died December 25th at Advocate Broman Healthcare Center, Bloomington. Funeral services were held December 30th at Rosenbaum Funeral Home, Gibson City. Burial followed in Melvin Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the Community Cancer Center of Normal. Online memories and condolences can be shared at rosenbaumfh.com. Alan Bergman, 67, of Thomasboro, died December 26th at Sharon Healthcare Willows, Peoria. Visitation was December 30th. Burial followed in Beckman Cemetery, Rantoul. Bayer Family Funeral Services, Flatville, is in charge of arrangements. Carl Ed Daniel, 75, of Urbana, formerly of Paxton, died December 23rd at home. Private services will be held at a later date. Bayer Family Funeral Services, Paxton, is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association or an organization of the donor's choice. Condolences may be offered at bayerfuneralservices.com. John Reardon, 66, of Potomac, died December 27th at home. A celebration of his life was held December 31st at Potomac Church of the Nazarene. Cremation rites will be accorded and burial will be held at a later date in Potomac Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the family. Memories or condolences may be posted on his memorial page at blurtonfuneralhomes.com. Carolyn Coble, 83, of St. Joseph, mother of a Ludlow resident, died December 27th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. Memorial services will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 3rd at St. Joseph United Methodist Church, St. Joseph. Memorials may be made to the family. Georgia Hillary, 91, of Gifford, died Sunday, December 29th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral services were held January 2nd at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Philo Road, Urbana. Burial will be in GAR Cemetery, Homer. Memorials may be made to Carl Hospice. Condolences may be offered at renner-wyckoffchapel.com. Jerome J. Galster, 63, of rural Paxton, died December 31st at home. Private family services will be held at a later date. Bayer Family Funeral Services Paxton is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice, and condolences may be offered at bayerfuneralservices.com. Judith Judy Coons, 79, of Dewey, died Wednesday, January 1st at Heritage Manor, Gibson City. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 4th at River Valley Church of Christ, Fisher. Burial will follow in Willowbrook Cemetery, Fisher. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday at River Valley Church of Christ, Fisher. Bayer Family Funeral Services Paxton is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Fisher School District. Condolences may be offered at bayerfuneralservices.com. Florence Flossie Greer Good, 95, formerly of Potomac, died December 27th at Bowman Estates, Danville. A celebration of her life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 4th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Burial will be in Potomac Cemetery beside her husband, Ray. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to New Hope Community Church, Fairmount, Illinois, 61841. Photos and memories may be posted on her tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Catherine M. Peterson, a.k.a. K.M. Nethery, of Penfield, died in early December at home. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 4th at St. Lawrence Catholic Church, Penfield. She had a soft spot for children, therefore people are asked to donate to St. Jude Children's Hospital at 1-800-822-6344. Beverly Potts, 92, of Urbana, mother of a Rantoul resident, died December 30th at Country Health Care and Rehab, Gifford. Funeral services were held Friday, January 3rd, 11 a.m. at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory, Urbana. Private family burial will be in Eastlawn Cemetery, Urbana. Memorial contributions may be made to New Life Christian Fellowship Church, 1211 East Kerr Avenue, Urbana, 61802. Condolences may be offered at renner-wyckoffchapel.com. Mark H. Zinders quietly slipped into an eternal sleep at his home, surrounded by family, on January 1st in Ludlow, Illinois. The family will have a private memorial in Mark's honor. Please send any contributions or well wishes at your discretion to the following address, P.O. Box 204, Ludlow, Illinois, 60949. Flowers or potted plants can be sent to Renner-Wyckoff Chapel in Urbana. Condolences may be offered at renner-wyckoffchapel.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week. We'll return and finish now with local news. Fire-struck building will likely have to be raised, from Rantoul. The Rantoul building that was struck by fire at 109 South Tanner Street Wednesday night will most likely have to be torn down. The walls are not stable, said the owner, George Papametro. I am about 99.9% sure it's coming down. The building was built to house a mechanic's garage. Even if it could be salvaged, there's things in there that can never be again. They don't build it that way. For the complete version and other articles, see the print edition of the Rantoul Press for this week. This has been Tamara. I hope to read with you again soon.